Good evening. Welcome. I'm glad to see you all here, especially because I know the Bengals are in a close game at halftime, and you guys knew that this was more important. Hey. Wait, who wants spoilers? Because Tom doesn't, so. Well, hey, I'm glad that you guys are here tonight. If you were here this morning, you got to meet Kay and Mylon a little bit. But Kay and Mylon Yurkovich are back with us this evening, and we've got some really good stuff in store for you. You will want a handout, so if you did not get a handout as you came in, if you want to just raise your hand, we will make sure to get one to you. There's some really good information on there, as well as something that we're going to walk you through as part of the evening. So just go ahead and put your hand up, and we'll get one to you. Okay. Let's see. Is Carol here? I may have to have you put your hand up again in a second, so I'll see you. But you need to know that Kay and Mylon have been married for 43 years. So if they're going to help us talk about relationships tonight, that is one good indicator to me that things have gone well for them, and that there's something they've learned they might be able to share with us. Beyond that, they are really nationally known speakers. We've used their book, How We Love, to craft one of our own message series that Pastor Chad walked us through last year, just looking at the ways that we handle stress, how we love people through that. And so tonight is really going to build on what we heard this morning. Mylon has been working with families and couples for over 30 years, and they both work together with family therapy and individual therapy. And so we're really just thankful to have them with us tonight to share some of their personal experience, some of their expertise. So would you welcome the Yurkoviches with me?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. You all made it back. Oops.
Hi. Good. This is going to be a bit of more of a responsive time tonight. So I'm glad you're here. Thank you for coming. It's not easy to come back to church sometimes at 6 o'clock at night, but we hope this is something that will help you. What we're going to share with you tonight is what transformed our relationship. And it is not only something that transformed us once upon a time, but it's a continual discipline that is really a part of our lives. It's a lifestyle now. And so it doesn't involve papers anymore, because we know how to do this without the papers. And yet we teach it to people all over. So, Kay, why don't you ask the opening question here?
Okay, so what we want to do first is just review, because there are probably a few people here. Let's see how many people are here that were not here this morning. Okay, quite a few. But for the sake of all of you, we're going to review these attachment styles one at a time, and I just want you to give me some words that go with the avoider. No, give me words that describe the person who has an avoidant attachment. Avoidant love style.
And the non-avoiders will have to supply the answers, okay? So what did you hear us say about the avoider? Give us words. Excuse me?
Flee.
Flee. That's right.
They flee under stress. They detach when they're stressed. What else? Say it a little louder. Detached?
Tasks.
Okay, tasks and mastery. That's right. They're performance-based. They were probably more rewarded for what they did as a kid than really who they were. Parents didn't really get down under the surface. In these homes, it's pretty superficial conversation-wise. So they'll go to tasks if they're stressed as well.
And they're usually very good at whatever they do.
Yeah.
And they're very capable. So when you put them into emotional situations and they don't feel as capable, it's really a problem for them, because they're used to being quite the master at whatever they do. But in interpersonal relationships, they struggle. And if they get backed into a corner, they get very angry, or they push back, or they really shut down and resist. What other words associated with the avoider? Anybody else?
Yeah.
Dismissing emotions.
Exactly,
they dismiss them because they don't know what to do with them.
Right.
We were talking to someone recently, and he said, I just don't have any emotions. There's none in there. And I said, well, if you think of a 3-year-old, they all have emotions. All kids have emotions. It's what we're taught to do with them that determines if we have access to them as an adult. So I say to avoiders, you got robbed. Literally. Because Jesus created you to have emotions. God created you to have emotions and to signal to other people and yourself what you need. And if you don't have them, then you can do what I did. We're going to give you two growth goals, but there's, of course, a workbook full of them. I had to have a feeling word list, and you've got one in your pamphlet here on page, I think it's the last page. This page 20, this last page, I don't know why it says 20, except for it probably came out of another handout.
It came out of our syllabus, that's why.
So the feeling word list, I had to have this every conversation so that I could try and determine a word. And at first I was guessing. But the more I did it and the more I worked at it, the more I began to recognize. And I actually prayed that God would give me back my emotions and even give me back the ability to cry, because I had lost that pretty much entirely. So this is going to be your new best friend if you're an avoider. And the second thing is to learn to ask for help. Avoiders are so self-sufficient and independent. They don't like asking for help because their experience as a child is there was no help. And it wasn't because their parents are mean or bad. It was just because parents didn't notice when they weren't okay. So learning to ask for help is a big growth goal for the avoider.
So one other thing about the avoider, they lack empathy. Okay? They have low levels of empathy and they don't see or hear or sense the distress of other people. So if a person is around them that is distressed, they won't pick up your cues and signals. A lot of people think avoiders are stonewalling them, and as though they have something, but they're going to put up a stone wall, and I'm not going to give it to you. But that's not accurate, because there's nothing behind the stone wall to give. See, they don't have high levels of self-awareness. Therefore, they don't have high levels of attunement toward you. They don't know what you want and what you're looking for. And that's often what we hear when avoiders come into our offices. Now, this isn't about gender. It could be a male or female individual. So I would have to say, just to your point, they had to pick a feeling, and you worked really hard at trying to pick feelings. Mm-hmm. And then you asked for help. And sometimes you would ask me, what do you see? Or sometimes you would ask me for a hug or something that would help meet the need to whatever that feeling word is. So how many of you have ever seen an avoider before on the planet? Just raise your hands if you've ever seen one. Just seen one with your eyes. All right, good. Don't point to anybody. Now, what about the pleaser? What are the characteristics of the pleaser?
Can't say no.
What else? Always smiling. That is pleasers, not recovered pleasers. They smile less. What else? They want everybody to like them. Because if you like them, what will they feel about themselves? That they're okay if you think they're okay. Anybody else have something about the pleaser? They take care to reduce their own anxiety. That's exactly right. If they see distress in you, they're automatically distressed. I teach couples in my office, you don't want to have a double drowning here. Somebody's distressed, you shouldn't necessarily go down too. So if one person is wobbling, it doesn't mean you have to wobble at the same level. So we want to learn to be concerned but not consumed by another person's distress. And we want to be able to monitor that and work on that. That's really important. Anything else? Okay, so growth goals.
Two big growth goals for the pleaser. Learn to say no. Now, that sounds very simple, but it's almost comical when I role play someone and I ask the pleaser to do something and I keep persisting and they have the hardest time saying no. And finally they say, it's just so mean. It's mean to say no. And I'm like, no, Jesus said no quite a few times. And Jesus had boundaries. And guess what? Jesus had enemies. So learning to say no, learning to develop the emotion of anger, which is very underdeveloped in pleasers, and learning that it's okay if you make someone upset. That's a part of life. You don't have to run in and fix it if someone's upset with you. Let them have their feelings. Yeah, it doesn't last forever. So those are three for the pleaser.
I had to make myself stand in front of the bathroom mirror and go, oh, oh. and practice learning to say no. And finally they came together, but it felt like a shock to me. The other thing I didn't know how to do is get angry, because anger is a separating emotion. And the last thing that a fear-based proximity seeker wants to have happen is for somebody to go away from them. It scares them dramatically, and so they never want to get angry and make you upset. So those are some growth goals. Mm-hmm. The vacillator. Describe that individual, male or female, to me. What are the characteristics of the vacillator? Remember, they're called in the attachment research preoccupied and ambivalent. What are they preoccupied about? Excuse me? What other people think? I'm sorry? I didn't hear that.
Idealists. Well, they're idealists, yes, because it's funny. The acoustics up here listening are kind of hard to hear. But
either that or I've lost hearing in the last 6 hours, one or the other, and I don't know which is true.
They're idealists for what reason? If everything's ideal, then they can stay away from pain. So the idealism, it serves a purpose for them of staying away from the pain of fear of abandonment, insecurity, being left, being unseen, being misunderstood. These are all words vacillators often use to describe their inner experience. And give me two more words to describe the vacillator.
Fight. They fight. They protest the lack of ideal. So because of the hurt, remember, all these originate in your history. In many cases, before you have verbal capacities. And so they're not explicit memories that you can remember. They're implicit memories which are retained within how you feel around people in their feeling states, or what we call body memories. So they fight. And what are they fighting? They had a history where they couldn't predict when somebody was going to come back and be close to them again. So they dream of a day where no one will ever separate, where no one will ever make them feel bad. And so when they feel bad, they think you caused them to feel that way. They don't see that they have a wound or lack of development that is actually causing that. They think it's your fault that they feel that way. So they tell you why you need to do it differently and why you didn't do it correctly the first time. So it's a protest. So the avoider flees, the pleaser freezes, and then fixes and tries to scurry around. Also, the vacillator fights. Now, again, these have historical origins. You didn't create them. They're not your fault. You didn't start them. You were not involved when that downloading was put into your heart, mind, and soul.
Yeah.
Hey, what about the
I have one
goals?
More thing about the vacillator. The vacillator can look like all three, because they'll please to make connection happen, but then the difference between the pleaser and the vacillator is they get mad if they're disappointed. And then if they're mad enough, they can just sort of go away for a while and ignore you because they're still in the protesting mode, sort of nursing their wounds in isolation over here. So they can kind of look like a combination. Two growth goals for the vacillator. Learn to get this feeling wordless. And when you start to feel mad, look at the feelings underneath anger. Every vulnerable feeling gets covered with anger. And that can be loud anger, or it can be quiet, pulling away from everybody. But they don't often really understand what those other, they don't communicate any feeling but anger. So that's an important one. And then I had a vacillator give me this growth goal. She says, every day I wake up and I say to myself, today isn't going to be as good as I think it is. What is she doing? She's taking ideal and she's bringing it down to real. And she says, and something always goes wrong, usually by breakfast. And she says, then I say to myself, this isn't as bad as I think it is. So what she's doing is she's bringing that all good, all bad swing that typically is what vacillators do, and she's pulling it towards the middle. And she says, I've been doing this for a year, and she said, I didn't know how painful this was, going up and down, mad, you know, disappointed, or good, 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 disappointed, mad. So those would be a couple important ones for the vacillator.
Right. Very important. Lastly, or second to last, the controller. The controller, give me words to describe this male or female, the controller, other than they're controlling. Go ahead. They're in charge.
In charge,
or they insist that they be in charge. They're just not naturally in charge. They take charge. What else? Can't hear you.
Rigid. They can be rigid.
Very rigid. They are rule followers. Because their life was so chaotic, they're looking for mechanical rules to follow. Whether it is in life, parenting, whatever the case may be, they tend to be rigid rule followers because they have nothing internal that they experienced as a child to lean back on. Does that make sense? Okay, anything else to describe the controller?
What's their primary emotion? Anger, that's right. You just really see one emotion, and that's anger. And if you think about it, they're trying for predictability because their childhood was so unpredictable. So there's a wound in all of us that perpetuates this behavior that drives our spouse crazy, whatever one of these styles you are. The victim is just the opposite of the controller. They just learn to tolerate the intolerable, and they continue to do so as an adult. They don't have an adult voice. They can't say no. They often, when there's conflict, they just go beyond freezing. They numb out and sort of mentally can go away and detach. So these are, you know, there's a one-hour CD on each of these out in the lobby. It is the most information we have anywhere on each of the styles. And, you know, we talk about not only what it is, what the style is, what they're like in relationships, but also how they parent, their sexual propensities, and then growth goals in much more detail than we're giving you now. So you have word counts in books, and when we speak, we only have so long, but it's a whole hour on each one. So if you want more information, that's a good way to get it.
Now, there's a passage of scripture the Apostle Paul writes to the Christian church in Ephesus, and he says this. He says, "This I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk in the futility of their mind." There is a world that it does not understand what God's desires are. Many of our family members and parents, they're doing their best. And it's not here to blame. It's here to just simply explain, as we said this morning, why I act the way I act and why I feel the way I feel in relationship. Having understood or having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that's in them because of the hardening of their heart, who, being past feeling, they're past feeling, they don't have feelings, have given themselves over to licentiousness, to work in all kinds of uncleanliness with greediness. But you've not learned Christ in this way. If indeed you've heard of him and have been taught by him, the truth that is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man, which is corrupt and isn't working well, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and you put on the new man, which is being renewed by the Lord in a spirit of wisdom. Now, Kay and I had to decide. She used to be an avoider. I used to be a pleaser. We had to decide, I don't want to be this anymore. It doesn't resemble Jesus. It doesn't work well this way. And I want to get rid of it. I had to decide, I don't want it anymore. I had to put it off, just like taking a coat off and dropping it over there in the corner of the room. So I just want to give you that idea that you don't have to live with whatever the identity is that you see that these attachment styles have given you. Now, turn to the secure connector page, which is on the very first of this packet.
We were going to role play first.
No, we were going to you're right. We were going to do these role plays. Okay, let's do that first.
Okay, so remember we talked about core patterns and that when you put these together, you get very predictable core patterns?
Do you remember that? That we said that this morning.
So Just to make it fun, we're going to role play it for you.
Well, we hope they think it's fun. Yeah. Hey, I'm home. Knock, knock. How's it going?
I have a surprise for you. I'm so excited.
Well, you'll
come see.
That's going to have to wait because I have to find something that was mailed to us today.
Honey, you always have to find something in the mail. Just take you 1 second. I'm so excited to show you.
It's really time sensitive. We have to sign it and get it to the people by 5 o'clock.
Oh, I know. I've heard it all before.
It's 4:45 right now, so we have to get it done. So whatever your
surprise
is, it kind of doesn't matter.
Every single, why do I even think of getting you a surprise? Because every day, it's not today, it's every day. Oh, the first thing you do, hello mail, how are you mail? Oh, yes, mail for me.
But you put the mail in a different place.
Oh, wait,
every day.
I know.
Where is
I know.
Mail?
I'll become a piece of mail. Hi, I'm a piece of mail. Now do you see me? Why do I even think I'm going to get you a surprise and you're going to come want to see it? You know what? I'm done. I don't even want to talk to you. In fact, I'm not even having dinner with you.
I bet she threw it away. I sure hope she wants to have sex tonight.
That's how out of touch avoiders can be sometimes. So he was the avoider, all about task and mastery, doesn't really see the person. What was I? The vacillator. I'm excited. I've been planning something. I'm like gonna get his face to light up. And I'm disappointed because he's all into his tasks. And so I protest and I go away. I don't know why vacillators love these two words. I'm done. When I hear that at my office, I'm almost like, okay, 99% vacillator. They just like those words. It's like how they feel at the moment. And the spouse initially goes, oh my gosh, we're getting a divorce. And then they realize, oh, that's just the emotion in the moment. And then things just sort of level out, but there's never any resolution. There's never any repair. You know, part of what's important in a marriage is when you have a rupture or you have a split or a hurt is to repair it. And a lot of people didn't get that lesson growing up either. I mean, how many of you saw conflict in your home growing up? How many of you? How many of you saw repair?
Wait a minute.
One.
Two.
Is there like anybody over there? No?
I saw two hands, saw repair.
Okay, so there we go. How are we supposed to know how to repair if we've never had that modeled to us or taught to us?
The number research says this is the number one couple to go into a counseling office.
And who brings them? The avoider or the vacillator? Of course. You think the avoider wants to go to counseling?
And then what's the goal of the vacillator in bringing them into counseling? Change, fix him.
Or
change
her.
Him. Something's wrong with him. He's hypo, she's hyper. In this particular case, it could be reverse gender. One's hyper, one's hypo. They're always going to be, but they can come to here and they can be able to connect. Does that make sense? They can come a lot closer because they can learn to manage and grow from this. Okay, let's do another role play. All right? We're not going to add. How many of you have ever seen that core pattern we just showed before? Now, I'm not asking you
even in your parents.
Like maybe your next door neighbors or something like that. How many of you ever seen that core pattern before, what I'm showing you? Okay, so you're experiencing this, and that's what's important for you to understand. This is more common than you would realize. All right, here's another one. Hey, honey, boo-boo, I'm home. How are you, honey?
Good.
What? Can I get a lip kiss?
I'm cooking dinner. I'm just trying to figure out what to cook.
That's a great recipe. No, I like that one you just were looking at. Let's cook
you know
together.
What, honey?
You can hang
no.
out and do something. Oh, that's a good one.
Really, I'd rather cook alone, and the kids have been waiting for you. Just go play with the kids. I can take care of this.
You know what? The kids will be okay. So are you okay?
I'm fine. I'm just trying to figure out. I'm not sure if I even have everything
fine.
For that. Let me look. What are you doing?
Well, I was looking to see if we had that so we could cook that.
I don't need any help.
Well, but I thought it would be kind of cool to hang out and cook that together.
I know you did, but I don't.
Are you sure everything's okay? You look upset.
I'm fine.
You're not. You're mad at me, aren't you?
I'm fine. I'm going to get mad if you just don't go play with the kids.
Like you didn't kiss me when I walked in and you didn't look real happy to see me.
I'm thinking about what to cook for dinner, so just my mind just wasn't really right there. So
there is something
wrong. If I kiss you, will you go play with the kids?
There is something wrong, isn't there?
Okay, that was all too familiar.
Now, that was not funny. You're laughing, but that is not a funny thing there.
So what was I? The avoider. What was he? The pleaser, right? So you can see how these play out all day in all kinds of situations. Okay, let me, oh yeah, I know which one. Okay.
One more.
Hey, Susie, yeah.
Hey, I'm home.
Oh gosh, I gotta go.
Yo, hey, I'm home.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I know. That's terrible. I can't believe you're having to go through that.
Can't believe it.
Yeah, I know.
I
really do have to go.
What do? You stay on the phone. You got empathy for everybody
okay,
else but
I got
me.
It. All right, bye-bye. Honey, that was Susie. You know she's just going through a terrible divorce.
I remember the day when I'd walk through the door and you'd light up like a Christmas tree. Now I walk in and it's ho-hum. Just ho-hum. And Susie's more important than me walking through the door. Why do I walk
Honey,
through the door anyhow?
Honey, don't get upset. You know what?
You know what?
Let's...
You know what?
I can cook your favorite dinner.
I don't want my favorite dinner.
Oh,
I'd
we
love
could
you
go
to light
out
up when I walk through the door. That I mean something to you. That I'm hello.
Oh,
instead
I just
of
didn't
just
really...
an afterthought and a brush off because you're talking to Susie.
Just don't get upset. Let's just go to your favorite restaurant. How about that?
What my favorite?
I'll call
thing,
and make reservations.
What my favorite thing would be is not a dinner or a restaurant. Is for you to see.
Oh
me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I see you. Oh. I'm so happy to see you.
Oh, that was as fake as I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to go to the gym. You have dinner by yourself.
Oh, come on, honey.
So what am I? The vacillator, what is she? A pleaser. She's trying to take care of somebody, and she's empathizing, and she's genuine, she's sincere. But I desperately need to be seen. Why? Because in my history, I have absences of being seen, or being seen was intermittent, or I was abandoned. I was working with a couple in my office recently, and her dad left when she was 6 years old, and she longed for opportunities to see him. She'd sit out and wait for him to pick her up, but she didn't know when he would come, and sometimes he didn't come. And then she had six stepfathers that walked through her house, and she never knew who was going to see her. And her mom would pay attention to her. Unless there was another man involved in her life, then she was in la-la land about the new guy, and then she was cut off again from attentiveness. And so do you think she would be sensitive to being seen or not seen?
Yeah.
Yeah. But to her mind, it was all about this, and she didn't stop to consider, no, it's all about that, her history.
So what was he protesting? What was he upset about in that role play? The lack of attention and connection. A controller would be more likely to say, how come the toys were in the driveway? I told you I want those toys out of the driveway when I come home. I want those toys picked up now. They would be more protesting a lack of compliance than they would the lack of connection. Although I have seen some controllers who are very dominating and jealous over the spouse having a life apart from them as well. So... remember what we said this morning, if you came from a really difficult home and there's trauma, you might relate to all the styles. And we just say, pick the thing you do the most and the relationship you most want to change. You know, we forgot to do growth goals for the controller and the victim, and I think this is so important. Of all the styles, these people have to face the trauma in order to really heal. Control is happening for the controller to prevent any childhood feelings from emerging. And when you can start to embrace that indeed you had a really rough childhood and begin to grieve it, because all these styles cut their grief off. Do avoiders grieve? Do they? Do avoiders grieve? No, they don't. They don't even have feelings unless it's, you know, maybe something that's really extreme.
Or a super painful
event. Do pleasers grieve?
I don't want to look at bad news.
Yeah, and they...
I want everybody to smile and be happy. I don't want to look at yesterday's bad news. Why would I look at yesterday's bad newspaper?
And we said vacillators get mad and they don't know how to cry. Controllers stop crying a long time ago. And victims, same thing. There's no hope, so it's not even sad anymore. So going back to your history and really trying to understand and start to have compassion for the child you once were. People from difficult homes often talk about their childhood like they're talking about somebody they don't even know and the life they had. There's no emotion or feeling many times around what they experienced. So they really do need compassion and experiences of someone seeing their pain, acknowledging it, and validating that indeed it was a really rough, a rough time for them when they were little.
So you're saying grief is a very important element.
Grief is a huge element for all these styles, and it's amazing how grief clears away anger.
It also,
you know, there's all kinds of anger management courses. Count to 10, do this. They're all behavioral, pretty much. I've never, ever been to one where they said, you have blocked your grief. You, all you angry people, you can't grieve. And it's like, so anger is the leftover emotion, and it does release a lot of anxiety and a lot of built-up tension. It just often does damage to other people while you're getting the relief. Vacillators and controllers often feel better after they're angry because they dumped a lot of unpleasant emotions out, and it's kind of from in here to out there. But everybody else in the family doesn't feel better. But they're going to ignore it because they don't want to kick the dust up again and have another storm. So everybody just kind of waits for normal to happen again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just...
So along with that grief is a compassion for my little self.
Right.
You know, we're like the front end of the train here. I'm the engine. But behind me are boxcars of all my years. And what Kay and I did is we... Not in order, but we ended up walking back through each of the boxcars of our lives that represent a year together. And we laugh, cry, and scream in those cars. We get angry and rage, or we'd sit and cry about what happened in that particular boxcar. And so we began to be very familiar with our own history. And we began to be very, very, very aware of our spouse's history. And when I began to live with her as an individual that was all of her history, I could then understand her and her reactivity. And she could begin to understand me. I could understand myself. We say you should have a PhD in your spouse's childhood. And if you do, you will live with them in a far greater understanding. Speaking of toys on the driveway, I had a controller in my office quite a few years ago. And they have no empathy for themselves or that little boy or girl that they once were. And he happened to tell me a story about his dad came into the driveway, drove the car, and ran over one of the little boy's toy trucks. And he was crying, and his father beat him with a hose. And I said, so what do you feel about that? He says, it wasn't a big deal. And I said, do you have any empathy for yourself? He says, no, I shouldn't have left my truck and the toy in the driveway. I reached in my briefcase, and I pulled out a picture of one of my grandkids, who happened to be four, and I handed it to him, and I said, I just want you to stare at that little guy for a second. As a matter of fact, take 2 seconds. As a matter of fact, take a minute and stare at this little boy. And he stared at this picture, and I said, what do you see? This is how old you were when that happened. And he was quiet for at least 2 minutes, and then he had a little tiny glint of a tear in his eye, the first one I ever saw. And he said, he's so young. He's so little. He's so tender. He's so innocent. I said, that was you. And for the first time in this journey, he began to have some empathy and compassion for the pain he was in that explained how and why he needed to be so rigid and controlling of his world. And it was a breakthrough. It was a start of a journey for him. Look at the first page of your packet. And this is what the secure connector looks like. And should we have them do it right now? Or should we have them circle what they think applies to them, or you want to do it later?
Yeah, maybe let's just do the first 12, just so you get an idea. And look through this and take a pen or pencil out, whatever you have with you. And if you think you need work in this area, I mean, you know, there's a continuum of I can't do this at all, that I can do this sometimes. I do this all the time. But if you think this is an area where you need work, then just put a little check mark by it. And we're just going to do the top 10 or 12 for the sake of time tonight. We don't have a lot of time. Does everybody have one of these? Did anybody need one? You've all got one? Okay, great.
Okay, no. It would be easier to do this for your spouse. I know that how they're doing in these areas. But do it for you, just through the first 12. Okay. I'm not going to ask you to raise hands. Well, if you could say yes to all 12, I can do all these things. Did anybody get all 12 of the first 12? Anybody in the room? All right, that's what I thought. So we all struggle with some of these things. And really, if you go through all 27, these are the signs of a secure connector. And I had to work on many of these to learn to build them into my life as an adult because I didn't learn them as a part of my development growing up as a child. So you and I worked on these very much, and especially this first 12, you and I did a lot to learn to change how we had been trained in our families. Turn to the next page for a moment, and before we start our break in 4 minutes, turn to this page. It says the comfort circle. And Kay, would you just overview this for us, please?
So there's two ways that you change this dynamic in your marriage, this nasty core pattern that blocks intimacy and causes frustration. You work on your own attachment style, your own broken style. And we say, get the list of growth goals from the workbook or the book and just hand it to your spouse and say, okay, there's 10 growth goals here. Pick the one that would mean the most to you. And start there. And and then just work on that one until you feel like you're really making progress. The second way, as you work your way out of this, is to learn to do what we call the comfort circle. It's probably more aptly named the discomfort circle at first, because it requires one person to stay in the listener role for an extended period of time. That's what makes this different from just any kind of conversation you might have. So awareness is the first step. And awareness means, I'm noticing that I'm stressed, and this is usually when I detach as the avoider. And instead of doing that, I'm going to ask him, will he be the listener, and can we take a trip around the comfort circle? Awareness might also be, my spouse is stressed right now. He's cleaning, and that's what he does when he's stressed.
Used to do.
So this is a good opportunity for me to ask him, would you like to do the comfort circle? Anytime you see someone in distress, even if you don't have time right then, you can just acknowledge the distress. I can tell you're not okay. I can tell that something's troubling you. Let's, later on tonight or tomorrow, whenever you can get together and talk, let's go around the comfort circle. So awareness is the first step. And then the second step is just to engage, which is inviting someone to take a trip around or you asking for it.
You know, we didn't know how to do either one of these. Seeking awareness, the Bible says in Psalm 139, search me, O Lord, and find the anxious ways in me. See if there be any way inside of me, and this is the New Milam paraphrase, that's not working well, and help me see the ways of pain, and then lead me in the everlasting way. Search my heart. Know my anxious thoughts. And so God invites us to pray and ask him for help if we want and wish to grow. To engage, number 2K is Ephesians 4, to speak the truth in love, each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. And many couples spend decades and they never speak truthfully to one another about what's going on the inside. The third one is to explore and find out more. That comes from the book of James, chapter 1, where it says, be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Now, if you're like how many of us are, and I think you are, we're quick to get angry and quick to speak, and we don't know how to listen. We're going to teach you tonight how to listen to one another. And then after we listen, we validate and empathize. Even if we disagree with the other person, we would say to them, from your perspective, I could see how you would feel this way. Is to validate and say, I see, I hear you. As opposed to imposing my view of whatever the topic is on them and trying to fix them. I let them have the feelings that they're feeling. I let them be what they are. And then I ask them a question, what do you need? And this is what is unique about the comfort circle. If I'm listening to you, Kay, I let you tell me with the feelings that you have shared and the questions I have asked, and I have validated you, and I ask you, what do you need? You're able to tell me perhaps what you need. I need a hug. You mentioned a hug earlier. I need to problem solve. I need time to think about this. You know, I'm glad I could just vent and get this off my chest. Thanks for listening to me. And I let that person determine what they need, having presented whatever it is they're presenting to me. And then that resolution of saying, I can do this, or I can't do that right now, or this is something I can or can't do, but I will acknowledge their need and do my best to help with that. As long as it's a healthy need and a healthy request, and when I am able to see and listen and provide that for you, that creates comfort. Mm-hmm. And it somehow says, I was seen, I was known by somebody else. In the last 32 years, 34 years, we've been around this comfort circle thousands of times. It's a lifestyle now where we listen to each other, know what's going on in each other's lives. And this is what we call it, and I agree with you, Kay, it feels more like the discomfort circle.
All growth is uncomfortable first, and that's why we don't want to grow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I say you have to really break the childhood rules you were raised with, and they're often unspoken and unwritten. In order to grow, you have to do the opposite. And the unspoken rule in my family was don't be needy and don't show feelings. Well, I had to break both those unspoken rules in order to grow, and it was very uncomfortable. But all I can tell you is if you'll push through the uncomfortableness, we don't have that core pattern anymore. And I can't even tell you, that is freedom, if there ever was freedom. Yeah. And so I think from this perspective in my life, at my age, I look at growth as a freedom producer. Mm-hmm. And we don't often think of that, well, you know, what's the point? Well, it's called freedom. And that's what God wants to give us. So we're going to take a 10-minute break. And we are going to start literally in 10 minutes because we don't have a lot of time tonight. And this next thing we're going to do, we feel is very important. So we're not going to sell books or anything right now. We'll do that after the whole event is over. But if you want to get up and get a snack, use the restroom, come back in 10 minutes, and we'll finish up.